the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, December the 4th, 2023. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Monday, let's do that Monday march back to work. Come on, we got to pay for those Christmas presents, right? Stiffen your back, put a smile on your face, and keep a prayer on your lips, and everything will be okay. Let's get things started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says, ask a question, and you're a fool for 3 minutes. Ask no questions, and you're a fool for the rest of your life. Yep. Question authority, and the authorities will question you.
Round up the usual suspects.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast, shall we?
Twisted history.
History.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
No.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
All right.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, that's always a possibility, I guess. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1943 during World War II, President Roosevelt closed down the Works Progress Administration because of the high levels of wartime employment in the United States. I think that was the last time any president shut down a government agency, too. We tend to do a lot of that these days. And this right here is a huge event in history. On this day in 1956, the Million Dollar Quartet, Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Johnny Cash got together at Sun Studio, Memphis for the first and last time. Oh, you've seen the photo, right?
This place is freaking awesome!
The other day on much of this same bombastic blogcast, I warned that the left was willing to do just about anything to stop Donald Trump because of Trump derangement syndrome, and they would do anything. Certainly not stopping short of trying to assassinate the man. I think he's in danger. And if something like that happens in this country, I don't even want to be outside my house when the reaction hits the fan. Could it trigger a real civil war in this country? Man, I don't even want to go there. Well, Friday night on Laura Ingraham's program on the Fox News Channel, she brought up some interesting things that we need to consider. And she has on as a guest Tulsi Gabbard. But first, Laura makes a case by playing a clip with Liz Cheney, who, as quiet a person as she is, I think is a very dangerous person. Here's the segment. It's only about 5 minutes long from Laura's program on Friday.
Republican voters in Wyoming resoundingly rejected Liz Cheney. And when she speaks, her old colleagues on the Hill, they just roll their eyes. So her constituency now consists of a few journalists, some never Trumpers, and the old Bush-Cheney perpetual war coalition. Yet a publisher still gave her money to write a book, which means she'll be an unwelcome guest in your home if you turn on CBS this Sunday.
People who say, well, if he's elected, it's not that dangerous because we have all of these checks and balances, don't fully understand the extent to which the Republicans in Congress today have been co-opted. One of the things that we see happening today is a sort of a sleepwalking into a dictatorship in the United States.
Wow. Sleepwalking into dictatorship. How poetic. Did she write that line herself? John Dickerson fell asleep in that interview, I think. All right, just like the Biden White House, the GOP old guards are in complete freakout mode over the staying power of Donald Trump. It's driving them all mad. And one of the most unhinged op-eds, and I've read a lot of them lately, was published in the Washington Post this week. And in it, Uber war hawk Robert Kagan smears not only Trump with the tired old Hitler line, how many times can we read that, but anyone who might think of working for him, writing, a Trump dictatorship is increasingly inevitable. It will be filled with people who will not need explicit instruction from Trump. any more than Hitler's local Gaultiers.
Now, that word there was Gauleiters. She mispronounced that. Gauleiters. A Gauleiter was kind of like a mayor.
Needed instruction. In such circumstances, people work toward the Führer, which is to say, they anticipate his desires and seek favor through acts they think will make him happy. Trump derangement syndrome is real. These people are sick. They need help. Joining me now is Tulsi Gabbard, Fox News contributor and former Hawaii congresswoman. Tulsi, like, I used to have Robert Kagan on my old radio show at the beginning of the Iraq War, and he's not a dumb person. He's a smart person. But how ironic is it that they're the ones who pushed legislation like the Patriot Act that gave the government a way to infringe on our civil liberties, and they're saying that Trump is the dictator in waiting here?
Yeah, Laura, the irony doesn't stop there. The things that he outlined in his incredibly long and difficult to read op-ed, along with things that Liz Cheney are saying, they're warning us of Trump's reelection being a dictatorship, and where he will do all of these things like turn the Department of Justice against political opponents, use the IRS to go after those who oppose his agenda. The list goes on. The thing is, that's exactly what the Biden-Harris administration is doing against President Donald Trump and against those they view as their political opponents. But the thing that really bothered me the most about Kagan's op-ed and many others who continue to warn the country that Donald Trump is going to be like a modern-day Hitler is that they're also the kinds of people who, and we hear this all the time, people say, gosh, if back in the day, if only one person had the courage to stop Hitler, to take him out before he rose to power, then we would have saved millions of lives. Well, this is what they're essential. This is a message
they're sending. They're inviting violence. Tulsi, you're saying they're inviting someone to take a shot at Trump.
This is what is so dangerous. Is they're sending a message to a rogue actor, a lone wolf, saying, hey, we need someone to save our country from this modern-day Hitler-like person. And that is what should alarm every single American. This is not how the United States of America is. This is not who we are. And yet this is what these people in positions of power are doing in abusing their power and undermining our democracy, because in their minds, the end justifies the means.
Now, I want to just kind of jump in here and point out that, yes, this is a dog whistle, but this is a dog whistle that's being blown by both those on the left and the right.
I am terrified for our country right now, given that type of rhetoric. I mean, unlike the left, we don't believe in censoring people's speech. But by doing what they're doing and saying what they're saying, they talk about dog whistles. That's a dog whistle to violence.
If
Hitler isn't waiting, then you've got to stop Hitler. Hitler can't, you know. So they know what they're doing, Tulsi. And I think they can't win on the issues. It's obvious they're not winning on any of the issues. So this is where they are. Do you anticipate violence in the streets this coming election year, given where they're going?
Well, this is what I'm so concerned about, Laura, is exactly what we're talking about here and why it's so incumbent upon us as Americans, not Democrats, independents, Republicans, but for us as Americans to take to heart the stand that we need to take to tell these people. And it's not just the establishment Democrats. It is them. But it is also these neocons like Liz Cheney and Robert Kagan who are fanning these flames that could push us to that point. Absolutely. And we need to tell them we will not stand for it and we will not fall for it.
I mean, Robert Kagan would still have us back in Afghanistan. I mean, he's still waiting for the surge to work. All right, Tulsi, thank you.
True.
Great to see you.
Well, you know, great point here. And it's the big dog whistle. But I had warned a couple of days ago that what's about to happen, and I'm figuring it's probably going to happen in the summer of 2025. You get Donald Trump back into the White House. The summer of 2025 is going to be even more violent than the summer of 2020. I mean, this is really something we need to concern ourselves with. And Donald Trump already has a track record as president. You look back on those 3 years that he was president, because his fourth year was basically just taken away from him with the COVID lockdown. But you look at those 3 years of his presidency, it was some of the best time we've ever had in this country. I remember remarking to my coworker, Chuck, I told him, I said, man, this was while Trump was our president. I said, man, I haven't felt this good since the days of Ronald Reagan. So this evil that we have to deal with, and we must, because we're not going to just lose our country. We're going to lose our Constitution first, then lose the country. And ultimately, we may end up losing our lives. This is something we need to pay a lot of attention to. And you look at the way it's being done, too. It's a concerted effort on the part of the left. All of the teachers' unions are leftist. All right? You look at this Randy Weingarten. You talk about a dangerous individual, someone who has the power to mold future generations with leftist ideology. Let's call it what it really is, leftist insanity. And she's busy about the... She's still the president of, what is it, the NEA? I mean, this is nuts. And yet we sit idly by and just allow it to happen. So then the question is, okay, then what do we do? Well, you start showing up at school board meetings, might start showing up at city council meetings, county meetings. I don't know, you know, you have a county judge, you have a county commissioner, commissioner's court in some counties. The way counties are, the way counties operate, governmentally speaking, varies from state to state. But you might want to start showing up at some of these meetings. Make your voice heard, because the other devil in the details here is the mainstream media. The mainstream media is clearly leftist, always has been, always will be. You're not going to change it. And all of the mainstream media is owned by one of six companies. Virtually all of the information that you and I consume in this country is owned and operated by one of six companies. And they're all leftist. So where does that leave us? That leaves us to get smart, get active, get proactive. And we need to start buying up media, creating new media outlets. And you notice that's a slow process. I mean, you have this outfit Newsmax, for instance. They've been struggling for 10 years or more to be heard, to find an outlet. They had to fight to get space on cable and satellite systems around the country. So this is an uphill battle. And the thing that really frightens me more than anything else is the fact that we're on the side of the Constitution. These lefties that we're fighting want to destroy the Constitution. They want to just discard it entirely. They want to tear it up. I've heard it said so many times, what we need to do is we need to take our Constitution, tear it up, and write a new one. Well, you can't write a new one these days. There are too many special interests, too many lobbyists. It is never going to happen. Besides, there's nothing wrong with the Constitution we've got. It's just not being followed. It's hard to believe, but it's already been a year since the first revelations from the Twitter files became public. And we had both Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger, independent journalists, to thank for this. Taibbi is an admitted Democrat, and he's had his faith shaken. I don't know that he's ever going to vote for Republicans, but that's not what this is about anyhow. Back on Thursday, Representative Lee Stefanik got some interesting answers from both Matt and Michael. And again, I want to stress these are independent journalists. And they did the dirty work of actually finding what was in the Twitter files. Remember, the Twitter files became public when Elon Musk took over Twitter. And he decided to publicize all that dirty laundry from the previous ownership of Twitter, which is now known as X, of course. So anyhow, Thursday, both journalists were in congressional chambers in front of a committee that Elise Stefanik is part of. And she asked some pretty interesting questions, but got some very interesting answers.
It has been almost 1 year since the first bombshell Twitter files. Looking back now, and my questions are for Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger, what was the most alarming thing that you came across during your review of internal Twitter documents? And I have a number of follow-up questions, so keep it short.
Sure. Thank you for the question. I think the most alarming thing that we saw was the regular stream, organized stream of communication between the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the largest tech companies in the country. They had an organized system for flagging content, not occasionally, but in enormous numbers, involving spreadsheets of accounts that ran to the hundreds and thousands. And this was shocking to us, and to the congressman's point, this isn't crazy conspiracy theory. We've already had four federal judges rule that they believe this activity violates the First Amendment. This is quite serious. We didn't know whether it was against the law, but we certainly thought it was shocking enough to be in the public interest. And that for me was the most serious thing.
Yeah, for me, it was seeing the so-called former FBI officials within Twitter and working with and other groups, including this Aspen Institute, participating in an effort to so-called pre-bunk the Hunter Biden laptop before it was ever published in the New York Post, and then to get it censored by Twitter in violation of Twitter's own terms of service, whose internal staff had concluded that the New York Post tweet had not violated their terms of service, and they censored it anyway.
Mr. Schellenberg, I want to ask you further that revolving door between the FBI and Twitter, and I also want to ask about those third-party, essentially government proxies. You referenced the Aspen Institute. Can you delve deeper into both of those questions, both of those topics?
Sure. It was the former general counsel of the FBI, Jim Baker, and the former deputy director of the FBI had both taken jobs at Twitter. There were so many FBI people at Twitter that they had their own internal group and their own little crib sheet to describe the difference between the terms that they use at the FBI versus at Twitter.
CIA had it as well.
Yeah, CIA as well had their own little internal group. And I'm sorry, what was the second question?
The third-party proxies.
Oh, yeah. Then the Aspen Institute, this was the weirdest thing. We discovered that Aspen Institute had created a workshop that it was attended by basically all of the major media, including as well as all the major social media platforms, to basically pre-bunk in advance the Hunter Biden laptop, even though it had not been, there was no evidence that it existed outside of the fact that the FBI knew that they had it because they got it in December 2019. So to have the Aspen Institute trying to persuade people not to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story in August and September of 2020 was quite chilling and disturbing to see.
These content moderators at social media platforms like Twitter wield an enormous amount of power in terms of determining not only what Americans can say, but also what Americans can see. Do you believe, Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberg, that it's appropriate for unelected bureaucrats or these tech companies to collude to influence what Americans can say or read?
Absolutely not. And, you know, I wanted to stress again that all this was happening secretively with the blessing of the Department of Homeland Security, with them sending things to this is from the EIP at Stanford to Twitter and Facebook saying, we repeat our recommendations that this account be suspended. We recommend labeling all instances of this article. We recommend that you flag as false this. All these demands being made secretly without any public review. My view is that the government doesn't decide who can speak in the town square. Why should the government be deciding who can speak on social media platforms? We the people should decide our own content as adults, legal content. It should not be decided by either government or big tech.
And Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberg, do you believe that this censorship is a form of election interference?
Absolutely it is. There's no question in my mind.
Mr. Taibbi?
Yes, I think it certainly can be. In the latest story that we did on the CTI League, we saw the overt partisanship of the people involved in this operation. That was actually the reason the whistleblower came forward. The people involved, just one of the quote was, they assumed everyone who was smart thought the way they did. They talked about the potential election of Donald Trump being an end of the world event. They talk about the wackadoodles who actually watch Fox News. And, you know, even as somebody who doesn't vote for Republicans, it was shocking to me to see this. And I think this was a consistent theme of not just the CTI League, but most of the censorship organizations that we looked at. They all tend to drift in one direction.
Now, you juxtapose what we have here, the answers you just heard, against the first segment, where we heard from Liz Cheney, and you put these two together and you're starting to get a more clear picture of what the deep state really is, who it consists of, because the deep state is not partisan. The deep state is bipartisan. And I think we know the names of many of the Republicans who were part of the deep state. Mitt Romney, very obviously. Liz Cheney, who has basically destroyed her own political career. And another member of the deep state would have to be Turtle, Mitch McConnell. There are several others in there. I think I counted like, what was it? I think a total of 17 Republicans that I had names of who were part of the deep state. And these people mean as much harm to this country as do those people on the far left. These are leftists. They just happen to have an R behind their name. And these are people we need to be very, very wary of. Conservative Brief ran a story, what was it, back on Saturday, about the Veep Stakes, as they called it. I like that. Veep Stakes. Who is likely to be the front runner for Donald Trump's running mate? And it turns out at this particular moment, because this could change, you know that, it's a former opponent of Donald Trump's. And it's none other than Dr. Ben Carson. Does that surprise you? Doesn't surprise me at all. There have been a lot of names tossed about as possible contenders for the spot, usually women. But Dr. Carson, former director of housing and urban development, and a staunch supporter of the former president. He really is. This is the kind of a guy you would want as a running mate for Donald Trump, somebody who's truly loyal. And it came about very organically, and that was that Dr. Carson was a skeptic at first. But after Donald Trump proved himself during those 3 years of his presidency, Dr. Carson was impressed. Now, an outfit known as the Calvin Coolidge Project posted on X, a source who is familiar with President Trump's thinking tells me that real Ben Carson is the leading frontrunner to be his vice presidential choice in 2024 at this time. Now, that's the key phrase right there, at this time. Now, a lot of people on X responded with approval, of course, with some mentioning the fact that the soft-spoken Dr. Carson is the perfect complement to the more brash Trump. You think about things from that angle? Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. And unlike many who served in Trump's administration, Dr. Carson has remained loyal. And that's something that Trump values, of course. Now, in October, Dr. Carson made his support for the former president official by giving him his endorsement. And at that time, he said, let's quote him here, says, our nation is in desperate need of strong leadership, a president who fights for the American people, our freedoms, our safety, and our future. Donald J. Trump is that leader, and I'm proud to give him my full endorsement for president of the United States today. Join me in this fight to make America great again. I love that. But Carson is far from a lock. Okay. A lot of other names are being bandied about. In September, Trump hinted at who might be his choice. And it wasn't Dr. Carson. See, unlike President Biden, the former president's not going to give a definite answer on picking a female vice president, though he said he likes the idea. Anchor Kristen Welker of Meet the Press asked, he said, Mr. President, have you thought about a potential running mate if you were to win the nomination? He says, I like not to think too much about that. You always do a little bit, but I really don't think it's time. I want to win. And, you know, it's very interesting about running mates. When you get down to a vice president, they said, nobody's ever made that kind of a difference. It's still about the person that's going to be president, but it's an important decision. So then Welker says, are you leaning toward a woman? And then he said, I like the concept, but we're going to pick the best person. But I do like the concept, yes. And then she says, a lot of people noticed when Governor Noem endorsed you, there were Trump Noem signs. Do you have your eye on her? So very frankly, he says, I do. I think she's fantastic. She's been a great governor. She gave me a very full-throated endorsement, a beautiful endorsement, actually. And you know, it's been very good state for me. And certainly she'd be one of the people I'd consider, or for something else maybe. But we have a lot of people. We have a lot of great people in the Republican Party. And then there's Representative Nancy Mace of South Carolina. She's good. And she addressed speculation because there was a lot that came up. But she addressed the speculation that she might be Trump's running mate. And she was asked by Charlemagne the God, you know, host of The Daily Show, if she'd be interested in being Trump's running mate during a recent appearance on the show. And unfortunately, I never watched the show. But she did say, I think it's intriguing. It's interesting. I haven't been asked yet, and my focus is now on South Carolina, as it always will be. And I understand why people might be talking about it. I do a lot for women's issues, and Republicans lost women last year. But my focus today, as it always will be, I love the Low Country, where you and I grew up in, and that's where my focus is. It's a conversation we need to have because I want my little girl to know that she can be president one day. You know, here again, this issue about whether you have a male or a female as a vice presidential running mate is not that big an issue. I don't even think race is an issue anymore. If it is, in the minds of some people, I would be very suspect of those people. I mean, come on, what's the matter with you? You know? I think it's going to be the individual. I like the idea of Dr. Carson because the man is brilliant. Everybody knows that. And everybody loves the way he speaks. Soft tone of voice. Slow, plodding manner. You know, I wouldn't care to sit through a long speech by him. But when you mention somebody like Kristi Noem, of South Dakota, my God, the woman is fearless. And the fact that she happens to be a woman, okay, great, all the better. But when I look at Kristi Noem, I first see her track record as a governor, which has been absolutely awesome, her background as a business owner. She's a rancher. She and her husband are ranchers. She's good. She's very good. You look at what she has done for South Dakota. My gosh. So, meanwhile, I mean, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. He has to be the nominee. Because if the Republicans don't support him, the Republican Party, if the Republican Party doesn't support him, the Republican Party will probably never win another election, a presidential election. Because there are going to be an awful lot of true-to-form Republicans, real conservatives, who are going to jump ship and probably try to form a new party. I mean, the Republican Party can no longer get along with on the backs of people like the names that I mentioned earlier, Mitt Romney, Mitch McConnell, people like Liz Cheney. They're a blight on the Republican Party. Now, if I were in a position to advise the Republican Party, I would advise them of this, and that is, you had better get in behind Donald Trump, and you had better support him. Because I mean it. I don't think the Republicans are ever going to win another presidential election if they don't back 100% Donald Trump. To the Comedy Corner with Colin Moulton.
My wife says I underthink. You ever underthink anything? There's proof of that. I definitely underthink stuff. You ever walk into a garage sale and realize it's not a garage sale at all? It's just a dude sitting in his garage reading the paper? That's happened to me twice in real life. I didn't even catch on right away. He goes, can I help you? He's like, nah, I'm just looking. It's okay, I'm gonna look around. Gonna check out your personal stuff for no reason at all. That was a garage sale in my head for a full minute. That is a long minute for the other guy. What did he even think I was doing? Like it was the most uncommitted home invasion ever? Like I just wandered in. I'm actually gonna browse, see if your stuff's worth going to prison, so have a seat. And then I didn't rob him. How disappointing for him. How embarrassed would you be if people showed up to rob you and then just passed on your junk? Like I'm not going to jail over this garbage, reinvest. Always doing that. I got caught in a bank robbery in Colorado, and I made that awkward. In a bank robbery. You ever been to Colorado? They don't have air. They have no air in Colorado. No explanation, no nothing. You just get off the plane, can't breathe. They're like... So you got to know that to know this. I had to walk to a bank, and I asked my front desk clerk where the bank was, and I can't tell you the name of the bank on stage anymore because Bank of America has this thing about laws and slander. She draws me a map because I'm walking, and I go, is that walking distance? She goes, yeah. So the part of that means if you're a camel, because I walked for 2.5 hours in zero oxygen. And I needed to do a wire transfer of $15 to my friend whose poor like me and needed $15. And I don't know if you know this, but wire transfers cost $15. According to Trevor. There's always a Trevor at the bank. I'm Trevor. Everything's $15. Ah, okay. Whatever, Trevor. So I turned away from Trevor, and I'm standing by the door. And there's a door here, and I could see the guy, a guy running in with a gun in his hand and a Bill Clinton mask on. I'm not making this up. He had a Bill Clinton mask and a gun, and he's running into the bank. And I'm the only one to see him. So naturally, I was like, that's a weird way to run into a bank. Because you never think bank robbery. And then a minute later, my mind caught up, and I'm like, oh no, this guy's gonna rob us. So I peed a little bit first. It's a time management issue. They don't let you go during the robbery. I'm not an idiot. Then I turned to everybody, and I go, you guys! And they all looked at me, and then I didn't know what else to say. All I could think of is the movies where they say, this is a robbery. But you can't say that if you're in the front, because then you're the robber. So I didn't say anything. I froze and I motioned to him. I was like, aha. I pointed at him. I introduced him. I hosted the bank robbery. Give it up for your robber!
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
That's it?
Tomorrow, G-Man.